This episode of Butcher's Breakaway is brought to you by you. You, yes, that's you. You out there. Yes, you. Are you pointing to yourself? Yes, yes, you. Thank you so much for supporting us over the years. Couldn't appreciate you more. It means the world to Gregory and I. Got a good show today, talking about craft stuff, talking about new assistant coach, talking about five-star questions, talking to Josh from Evolving Wild, one half of Evolving Wild. And then, of course, we're going to come back and talk baseball because that's what we do on this podcast. So stay tuned. We save the baseball till the end. Mark Messier is coming up right now. Here we go.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Butcher Breakaway, welcome to the week of Butcher Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead of The Athletic, and I'm here with my co-host, Gregory, also of TheAthletic.com. Gregory, say hello. Yes, we're recording this podcast all
really
out of order.
Get
it out of the way.
I'm going to save what Ryan did at the end of the pod for a little later, and I'll spring it on him then.
Okay.
I promised some people that I would open this podcast with a gambling story, and I need to open this podcast with a gambling story, Ryan.
Okay. I'm going to give you a 4-minute limit. What do you think?
Ooh, 4-minute limit.
Can you do it?
Over, under. Yeah, I think that'll be fine. Okay. It's not that great of a story. It's just a sign of the times. Let's call it that.
I've heard it, and I think you can sum it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, basically, all everyone needs to understand is I reached a point of isolation where the casino by me is still closed, and the state of New York still doesn't have a mobile gambling app.
Seems silly.
Seems dumb. Seems like they're losing money. So what does Greg do? Greg drove an hour and 40 minutes towards Syracuse, New York, to go to a casino resort called Turning Stone, which is back open. First of all, way too many fucking people at this place. A concerning amount of people.
Friend of mine, Atlantic City this week. He's like, what?
Huh? Credit where credit is due. You can't walk into the place without a mask. Mm-hmm. If someone catches you without a mask on in there, you're immediately escorted off the property. Yeah, so, like, they're doing everything they can to make sure everyone is following the rules. Still, way too many people. I was uncomfortable the second I walked in there. But I walked in there, Ryan, because I needed to play some sports bets.
But I went
That's
in
really
anyway.
What it comes down to. I placed 6 different sports bets, a couple parlays, a couple straight bets. Again, this was an hour and 40-minute drive one way towards Syracuse, New York, from Troy, New York, to place these sports bets. I went 0-6. If that's not a sign that I just shouldn't have done it,
wait,
I thought
you were going 0-9. This is totally different.
9 total bets.
Okay, I thought you went 0-9.
Some of them are condensed into one bet. I counted today, it was 6 bets. I had a 3-team parlay that depended on the San Diego Padres, who lost.
Tough times.
I had Anthony Davis over 9.5 rebounds. He got 9 rebounds. I had the Colorado Avalanche money line. They were down 3-0 and didn't register a shot on goal in the first period.
Yeah. Can we talk about that series real quick? Not that I've watched a lot of it, but I'm shocked that the Stars are doing to the Avalanche what they are doing. It is pretty unbelievable. I didn't think the Stars really had that in them, and I thought the Avalanche were way too talented to lose to the Stars, and I think the Stars are pretty much, like, I know the series is not over and anything can happen, but the Stars have all the momentum right now, and they're playing their fucking asses off. I'm just surprised that it all happened. I know they have the after locker room chain ritual at this point. Seem like they're a really quick and bonded team, and I think they could be a legitimate, like, threat to win a cup all of a sudden, because of the teams left, I really think, like, Tampa Bay has to be the favorite versus Las Vegas at this time, but it's hockey, so everything's up in the air.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's truly nuts.
Thank you. Anyway, yes, you lost your bets.
Yeah, yeah, it was a real kick in the nuts, Ryan. That's really what it comes down to.
It happens.
But you know what I'm going to do next weekend? I'm going to do it again.
Yeah, that's okay. Makes sense. All right, let's get into the Ranger stuff real quick. Not too much this week, here and there, and then we have a good interview with our friend Josh from Evolving Wild. Always awesome. And then at the end, we talk a little bit of baseball, but we warn you, so you'll know. We say, hey, baseball time. It's about an hour into the podcast, so check that out. All right. At the end of this podcast, I mispronounced our new assistant coach's name. And his name is, I call them Martin Jacques, because I have dyslexia and I read it from Paige, and his name is Jacques Martin. Anyway,
Yeah, you're that tough luck, but very on brand.
Incredibly. It couldn't be more on brand for Blue Shirts Breakaway than me doing that. Now, I had this weird premonition this morning. We've talked about on the podcast, Mondays are always the time they announce things. Now, Elliot Friedman reported last night that, you know, he was the favorite to be the assistant coach. So I'm not really reporting on anything, but I was taking a run this morning, as you do when you're training for a half marathon and you want to kill yourself. Maybe I shouldn't say it, but that way, when you want to put yourself out of your misery, that's probably a nicer way to say it. And I was like, I think something's going to happen with the Rangers today. So I just tweeted it out. And then all of a sudden, Jacques Martin is our now assistant coach. We're going to be breaking it down later this week on the BSBOT. Our good friend, not a good friend, but our coworker rather, Jesse Marshall is going to be joining us to what?
Just funny. Our good friend actually is not our good friend.
We don't know him. We don't know him. He's not a recurring guest. So
it's the way it was presented. Like, you could have just called him a good friend of the podcast, and everyone would have been like, "Oh, they must have a relationship." We could have just lied to people.
Oh, when do we
but
lie?
Your need to be honest is sickening.
When do we lie to people?
Your need to be honest is sickening.
I am always honest.
First, you come out pro post office, which makes no sense. I've never understood that about you.
I got a letter
now
from a friend that was.
You think the Rangers signed a guy named. You think the Rangers are trusting their defense to a guy named Martin Jacques, and it's just now we have friends that aren't our friends, but they're still our friends because we work with them.
Marty Jacques drafts from the Penguins himself, world champion. He's coming over to shore up this defense. He's got a lot of nothing to work with. I wonder how him and Mark Stahl are going to get along. Probably great, you know. They're about the same age, 67. And they're going to get there's a lot of good chemistry to go around there. So I'm excited to see what he could do because, as you could tell from looking at Twitter today, the joke was got to be like, well, he has a lot of nothing to work with. He's worked with nothing before, so get ready for it. At least he has Adam Fox this time, right? At least he has that, Jacob Trouba. He's going to have a lot on his hands. But we're breaking it down later this week.
Yeah, I will say this. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know a lot about Jacques Martin.
Jacques.
He's got two cups. He's got two cups. The Penguins have always punched above their weight defensively, I think is the safe way to say it.
Not only defensively, they just call guys up and they just play well, always. It's kind of always their thing.
Smart people who know more than us, Ryan, collectively on Twitter, when it was reported in Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts that the Rangers had interest in Martin, that it would be a good move, and that historically – Martin has been able to use the sum of his parts better than you would think, given the – what's the word I'm looking for here? I'm really struggling today. Given what was at his disposal. He's a sum of all he seems like a guy that is willing to adjust his schemes to fit the characteristics of the players he has. And if you're the New York Rangers, that's what you need to be in the business for right now because, again – I don't know how many times we've said it on this podcast. Yes, Mark Stahl's not going to be here forever, but Fox, outside of Fox, Trouba, and maybe Lindgren, they've been hurting. And again, we've put emphasis on the defensive players, but this also goes to the forwards the Rangers have. It's not exactly like the Rangers have a defensively diverse group of forwards at their expense right now, especially if they lose Jesper Fast to free agency.
Looking likely, but nothing really reported yet.
Well, we don't really know.
Yeah.
If there's ever a time for Foss to come back under market value, it's now because of the flat cap. And Jesper Foss is the type of player that'll get squeezed. No team's going to want to spend on Jesper Foss. He's the guy other teams might not value appropriately, and the New York Rangers might be able to squeeze him back in. But either way, it's the entire scheme that Jacques Martin will bring to the New York Rangers that they desperately need. It's a different voice. It's different eyes. It's a guy with good track record. It's a coach that seemingly needs to lean on an assistant coach for that part of what he does. So it's hard to imagine the Rangers could have done better. We're going to learn more about him as the week goes along here. Obviously, just because it's a good hiring in theory won't mean it's a good hiring in practice. He's going to have to do it for us to say one way or the other. It's just from where we sit today, it's awfully hard to think the New York Rangers could have done better from an assistant coach standpoint.
No, and that just kind of falls into your lap, right? Because if the Penguins win that series, is he available? Probably not. He probably stays on. I mean, they shook up everything in the Pittsburgh Penguins organization a couple weeks ago.
Right, and And you know what, Ryan? Credit where credit is due. This goes back to something we've talked about before on this podcast, and something we talked about with our friend, our actual friend, Arvin, last week.
Actual friend.
The Rangers need to be the organization that's smart enough to take advantage of other teams' overreactions. And whether the Penguins felt they needed a different voice in the room or whether it was a misguided firing, they got rid of their assistant coaches. And one of them is someone like Jacques Martin, who you
Marty
can
Jockstraps,
swoop
yes.
up. Yeah, yeah, Marty Jocks. You can come in, swoop in, take them, and make your team better. Not always is your ability to take advantage of an organization going to be player for player. This is the Rangers taking advantage of an organization that may have overreacted to what their team did in a play-in series that happened 143 days after the regular season paused.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's all I can do is thank you, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh seems to be having a really rough offseason, but they won cups, like a bunch of them, so I don't care.
Well, the funny thing is, like, it's in theory, and I guess we should talk about the Kasperi-Kapanen trade, because now that we're thinking about it, it happened after our podcast stopped recording last week.
Yes.
It's not that Kapanen's a bad player, right? It's not that the Penguins acquired a bad player. I think you and I both think he's going to be quite good in Pittsburgh.
If we could get a Kapanen for Georgiev, we would have been over the moon.
Yeah, it's not that Kapanen's a bad player. It just feels like the Penguins paid twice as much as they should have to get him. Those kind of trades are hard to digest because it's almost. I don't know if I want to make this comparison, but since we're a Rangers podcast, I'll make this comparison. It's almost kind of like the Martin St. Louis trade,
mm-hmm.
where the Rangers, in my mind, clearly gave up too much for St. Louis, who wasn't going to go to another organization. So the Rangers didn't have to give up what they gave up to get him. Doesn't mean I dislike the Martin St. Louis era with the New York Rangers. I was quite entertained by it. I liked St. Louis as a player. I think he did a lot of good things for the Rangers in his 2 years that he was here. It's just that the Rangers shouldn't have had to give up 2 first-round picks and Ryan Callahan for him.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so it's not that I think the Penguins got a bad guy. It's just that you look at the Penguins, and they did the Leafs such a big favor by eating the money, by giving up a first-round pick, and by giving up a top prospect. Maybe the Penguins should have done 2 of those 3 things. I think even then that would have been an overpay. They should have definitely done 1 of those 3 things. Like, if the deal was happening for the first-round pick, I'm sure people would be like, that seems like a steep price, but I don't think people would laugh at it. People laughed at this trade because the Penguins were taken advantage of. They still got a good player, though. Like, for the next season, the Pittsburgh Penguins are probably a better team by having Kapanen than by having the draft pick.
Absolutely. There's no arguing that whatsoever, but the value of that draft pick is so high. And to give it over to the Maple Leafs and get them out of trouble, then they can use that pick to swap whatever they want and get whatever they want at this point. It's a great deal for them.
Absolutely. The Penguins are better. The group that they have is better because they have Kasperi-Kapanen. The problem is the Penguins, once Crosby isn't Crosby anymore, the Penguins are making it impossible to think that they're going to be able to be anything near competitive. As soon as Crosby leaves, they're done. The problem is we have no idea when Crosby's leaving.
Well, Crosby is sneakily young all the time. He's only 33. It makes me sick.
Sure, but he's also a guy that's got a long injury history. He's not a guy that's been able to stay healthy 100% of the time.
But when you say leaves, you mean retire, right? Because I don't think he's going to play with another team.
No, he's not going to another team. Never. Yes. Retire.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that in 4 years. Just my uneducated opinion on that. I could see him at 37 trying to hang it up. Totally could see that. But that's four more years.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to make a Malkin decision sooner than that, I believe.
We've gotten some questions on Malkin. Like, could Malkin fit on the Rangers? Like, you know.
Here's the thing. As fun as it is to do all these different things that we're going to do this offseason with theoretical trades, there's one thing I know. It's that the Penguins are not trading Evgeny Malkin.
Yes.
Like, they're just – whatever happens with Evgeny Malkin, they're just going to go down with the ship.
He's sticking.
That's what's going to happen in Pittsburgh.
Couldn't agree more. Other topics we got to get to real quick. The Kravtsov debacle from over the weekend. He's going to play in the KHL all year. Who cares?
We still don't know if it's all year.
Yes, we do. Well, he's going to play the whole season for the KHL pretty much. We think.
We don't know that either.
We think, unless the Rangers want to call him back. But the season's going to be mostly over by the time the hockey's actually playing in the NHL. So they're probably going to let him finish out over there, and they'll call him over after the season's over. That's it.
Which would make perfect – if the season starts in mid-December, I don't think it makes any sense for the Rangers to call him back. What, you're going to wait 3 more months? Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, just let him finish the season there. But at the same time, if the Rangers didn't want to wait 3 more months, they can call him back.
It's right,
just,
but there were, quote-unquote, conflicting reports that he could play or he was going to be locked into playing with the KHL. Vince talked to the Rangers and said they can call him back whenever they want. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's the same Kravtsov conversation we had last week or the week before.
Oh, I don't care. I'm happy he's going over there. I'm happy he's developing. Oliver Wallstrom got called this week too, so it's not that weird.
What was the honest expectation for Kravtsov if he didn't go back to the KHL?
Like 30 points?
He'd be starting at Hartford again.
35 points if he played on the third line?
Honestly, where is he playing? With the absence of a major trade happening before the season started,
he'd have to beat out Gauthier. And in my eyes,
we have no reason to believe that was going to be likely.
That's exactly. He had not done enough to do that just yet. That in my eyes. So
you're talking about a right side of the Rangers wing that currently has Pavel Buchnevich entrenched, that has Kaapo Kakko entrenched. The Rangers gave up meaningful assets to get Gauthier. I would consider him entrenched. So you're still talking about a guy that in all likelihood is either playing on a third or fourth line in the NHL. And why that has some value, it only has value on the third line. And then if the Rangers bring back Jesper Foss, Kravtsov once again becomes the Rangers' fifth right winger. And they're not going to keep him up. They're going to let him play in the AHL. They're not going to bury him on the fourth line like they have other people. He's going to get better, more meaningful minutes playing in Russia.
There's no doubt about it.
If he comes back in March, he's essentially a trade piece the Rangers have acquired. Forget the Russian wingers take extra time or Russian prospects in general take extra time argument, which is a good argument to have, and I'm sure we'll have it again. But what about opening night were you expecting Vitali Kravtsov to play 15 minutes a night? It's never going to happen.
If he came over here and knocked the lights off last year, or even in camp when we saw him just recently, he was impressive, like the level of Keandre Miller was impressive, then they wouldn't let him do this. But he didn't. So that's just it. He's going to develop.
The thing that I think the conversation ends with, which Ranger right winger do you expect him to get playing time over? And the only answer is if Jesper Foss walks. But we don't even know if Jesper Foss is walking yet.
We're good, yeah.
So, like, if Foss comes back, he is firmly, just for this upcoming season, the Rangers' fifth right winger. I'd rather that guy just play 20 minutes a night in Russia every night.
Agree. All right, let's get to five-star questions, and then we'll go over to our interview with our actual good friend, Josh, from Evolving Wild. If you want to leave a five-star question, leave a five-star review on Bullshit Breakaway, the iTunes. We will read it on the show. This is from Ian. He literally wrote this out for me. Don't worry, everyone has trouble pronouncing my last name. It's C.T. Lidis. Okay, Ian, thank you. It's the correct pronunciation. Number two is the question is, why is the Rangers' social media platform so boring? I know they've gotten better over the years, but they still don't compare to Dallas or even New Jersey. Their social media platform are rather boring and post nothing but players smiling with a Party City logo in the top right corner. Time to fire somebody. Okay, I could do a whole hour and a half on this. I won't, but I could. I think the Rangers are a little bit behind the times in social media, but they have come a long way this year. Are they like the Canes or the Dallas Stars or even the Colorado Avalanche? No, absolutely not. But I think the Rangers MSG account does a pretty good job. I think they're pretty memeable. Sometimes they do some funny stuff. They try and interact with the fans. They do it well. The New York Rangers actual social media account has come a long way in the past like 2 months, because before this past 2 months, it's been pretty brutal. It's been pretty corporate. And I think they're starting to see the lay of the land that, like, wow, we can get more interaction and people genuinely like us, and it affects people the way people look at us if we're friendly and interactive on Twitter. And I think they're going sort of that direction. They just haven't figured it out just yet.
Yeah. It's hard to compare the Rangers to other NHL organizations because you just have to remember who runs the Rangers. So like it's not like the Knicks do anything super fun either. So when it really comes down to it at the end of the day, and I haven't said that in a while, I don't think, it comes down to the Rangers' social media account reflects how the organization wants to be run. And until Dolan, et cetera, wants to change the organizational structure, I don't think we're ever going to see the Rangers social media account reflect that. Like maybe he's loosening the reins a little bit on some of this stuff. I thought what the Rangers were doing with the ping pong ball was at least funny. It didn't, like, it was funny for the Rangers. I think other teams probably would have had more fun with it.
Yeah, I get jealous by Rangers standards. It would fun and like other accounts. I'm like, oh wow, this would be awesome.
Yeah, but, I think the Rangers are a reflection of what the organization wants to be on social media, and if that changes, it'd be great because, like you said, the Carolina Hurricanes clean up on social media accounts, and well deserved because their content is good and it's funny and it's creative and it's different. I think everyone just wants to see different on Twitter these days. I personally, whatever the Rangers want to do, good for them. Like it to me, this is kind of like a third jersey conversation for me. It's not going to impact my day one way or the other. It would be fun. It would be fun to interact with that account more if it seemed like it had personality, but I'm not going to hold my breath hoping it does.
Yeah, same. I hope it does one day. I will actually hope. This next question is from Mike from New Haven, who's a frequent commenter here. Pretty much I'm going to sum his question. Hey, Tony D'Angelo is a very, how do I put this, controversial figure when it comes to... Yeah, Twitter and hockey lands in general. You know, he says here, it's like, whatever he wants to do, I don't care, but he is sort of a fire starter in that case. Nevertheless, his offensive value has never been higher, and he's always strictly looking at Tony the player. Would you entertain the idea of a sign-and-trade involving him, and what do you think the return would be? Yes, I think we've talked about this a lot with Tony, where we do entertain the idea of just, like, or maybe not the sign-and-trade aspect of it, but if someone wanted us to sign him and then trade, we would do it. I think if Tony right now is very expendable despite his offensive ability because of the way Rangers' right side lines up. I think you can make a case that Tony isn't expendable if you wanted to, like with his points and offensive ability. But we talk about this with Josh in a second. The ability to actually play defense is really important when it comes to winning a cup and when it comes to succeeding. Tony lacks in that area. And yes, his points and the offensive ability is rare, and it's quite extraordinary, honestly, for a defenseman in the NHL, but the rest of his game is pretty lacking. So if I had the ability to get some serious package in return, like, would you do it for the number 15 overall pick right now? Cause I would.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Easily. Right?
This is another conversation I don't want us to have every week. Cause I think we're beating a dead horse at this point.
Yeah.
Like everybody has a good reason. We can't hide from it for not wanting Tony D'Angelo on the New York Rangers. If it deals with off-ice issues, it's a good reason. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like it isn't. If it's bothersome, it's troublesome, it's worrisome, all of those things. It's not how you would expect someone to conduct themselves off or away from... Like, if Tony D'Angelo's name was John Rocker, everybody would feel one way about it and everyone would agree with it. But...
I think that's just a different time. That's the 90s.
Yeah, we live in a different time. There are 7,625 reasons to trade Tony D'Angelo for off-ice issues. But if we're talking specifically, like we have been on this podcast, about on-the-ice production, it doesn't matter how many points Tony D'Angelo ever puts up. He will never be better than the third most important right-handed defenseman for the New York Rangers. Now, we've talked about scenarios where the Rangers could actually keep him. That's by moving him to the left side, where the Rangers clearly have a weakness and they can clearly play him with someone that can help make up for his defensive deficiencies. They don't want to do that for whatever reason. We've seen it time and time again. The only time Tony D'Angelo ever plays on his offhand is when the New York Rangers are desperate for a goal late in the game, and that's when they play him with Adam Fox. If that's not something they want to do on a night-in, night-out basis, then the New York Rangers, like any smart organization would see their third most important defensive asset as something of extreme value on the trade market. And whether it's by sign and trade, whether it's by for a straight draft pick, whether it's to a team that is seriously lacking on the power play, whatever reason you want to come up with, there are more reasons to trade Tony D'Angelo than there are to keep him, because the argument to keep him will always be overshadowed by the fact that he is not Jacob Trouba and he is not Adam Fox. And if you're not going to move him to the left, he's not going to be more important than those two players. So, in my mind, that's like having four really good starting pitchers, but having a shit lineup or infield and trying to turn that starting pitcher into infield help.
Right.
It seems cut and dry to me. I don't understand the – I mean, I understand the people that are like, oh, you can't be cut and dry because you feel X, Y, and Z. Like, I'm not telling you who to vote for. That's up to you, buddy.
I love how we just say Tony's name. I'm just talking
from a hockey team building standpoint. Tony DeAngelo will never be more important than the third right-handed defenseman on the New York Rangers.
That's a fact.
I would like to get more value for that because I think that position on any hockey team should be somewhat replaceable. It shouldn't be something you lock into for a long period
of time. If Adam Fox didn't exist, I would be talking about signing Tony DeAngelo for 5 years.
Correct.
I think that's exactly where I am.
Maybe we wouldn't be, but again, from a hockey team building standpoint,
I think I would be, honestly, which, you know, again, taking away everything about Tony, I just think his offensive ability is really rare. Just is. And he has that. Now, we saw him get exposed in the playoffs. I think he was a little hurt at the time. I got taken advantage of and was totally destroyed defensively. Could not defend. And he had times like that this season where he had that issue. But what he brings otherwise, there's some repetitiveness. I want Adam Fox to run the power play, not Tony. Tony's better at running the power isn't better at running the power play than Adam Fox when things are probably in the next 2 years. So I want Fox to do that, and that's just the end all be all of it. And if Fox didn't exist, if Fox didn't do what he did this year, I think I'd be talking about Tony on the Rangers for a long time, but that's not the case. So we have extra value, and I want to take advantage of it. That's it.
Yeah, but we even by mentioning who runs, like, Tony DeAngelo doesn't run the power play for the New York Rangers. That's Artemi Panarin's unit. He is the most important factor on the New York Rangers power play. Yes, Tony DeAngelo plays on it, and yes, Tony DeAngelo plays at the top of the ice, mm-hmm. which makes him a central figure. But that power play is successful depending on the mood Artemi Panarin is in. So, like, Ryan Lindgren could play on that power play unit, and it would still be pretty damn good because Artemi Panarin decides it's pretty damn good. I don't want to sit here. There is something to being a power play quarterback on a normal power play unit. What the New York Rangers have on their first power play unit is not normal because Artemi Panarin exists.
Fair.
So I just want that to be out there in the universe right now.
Couple more questions. Michelle N says, "Hey guys, great episode as always. My question is, what would be your NHL team equivalent to the Knicks' bizarre level of continuous talent, lack of talent rather, and bad luck?"
The important part there is lack of talent.
Continuous bad talent and bad luck. Yeah. So
the NBA equivalent, specifically the National Basketball Association, like the NHL equivalent to the Rangers.
The NHL equivalent to the Knicks. So who?
The Knicks. That's what I meant.
That's correct.
Martin Jocks.
Yes. This is a tough one. I feel like there's been a lot of parity in the league. I can't say Ottawa because they made like that deep run and also beat the Rangers in the playoffs a couple years ago. The Jets have been good. You know, I mean, Montreal has been good. Carey Price is there. I'm trying to think of like teams that are just total shit. Arizona, maybe? Like, but even then.
Yeah,
it's not, they're not
Arizona's,
the Knicks.
Arizona's problem isn't always luck. It's part of their problem is, it might be the Coyotes, but even then they've made the playoffs. The Knicks can't do that.
Yeah, I want maybe Vancouver. No, Vancouver made the finals and they set their.
And they also, the Vancouver got Pedersen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's tough. Yeah. That's a tough one.
I don't know if there is a.
The Knicks are an anomaly.
Yeah, there's something.
The Knicks have no comparison.
I'm looking through all the Panthers, no. Sabres, no. I guess you could make a case for the Sabres, but they have Eichel. Like. And they have Dahlin.
Yeah, but I guess you can make the argument that Eichel to the Sabres is like Mello or Porzingis was to the Knicks. Knicks couldn't figure it out with them either. Knicks figured it out once with Mello, and then they quickly stopped. I think it's the Sabres. Because the Sabres still do moves that make you think they're trying, like Jeff Skinner. But then they also do shit like, we don't want Ryan O'Reilly anymore, despite him being really good. And what does O'Reilly do? He immediately wins a cup in St. Louis.
Yeah, I can't look at any other team here. The Buffalo Sabres are the only team I think are even close.
I think it's the Sabres, because I think you can say that Eichel to the Sabres is Mello or Porzingis to the Knicks. The Knicks can figure it out with them. The only difference is the Sabres haven't tried to trade Eichel yet. which the Knicks did twice.
Next question is from Lindros Forever. If the Rangers strike out finding a number two center and move Strome, what are your thoughts on moving Kreider to center? Could solve some problems in fitting all wingers.
Yep, no, absolutely. It's a non-starter. Stop the question. Chris Kreider's not. This isn't like turning a shortstop into a second baseman.
Yeah, it's not. It's not happening here.
I understand we're moving a lot closer to positionless hockey, but the things that Chris Kreider does well, he will no longer do well if you take him off the wing.
Couldn't agree more. He does keep up the good work, praise be. I appreciate the question. This is the last question from the 732. Hey guys, love the show. Whenever anything major happens, I check for emergency podcasts right away. They always have it on Monday, so they come out Tuesday morning. Sometimes we do them early, of course. Here's my question. Who's your favorite hockey player to watch that was never a Ranger? Mine was Ray Bourque. I guess, like, I feel like she is asking for historical preference, not just, like, current players, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm too young to say Mario Lemieux.
That's what I was thinking, too. Like, I'm too young. I don't want to be like, oh, Gretzky. But Gretzky for the Rangers. Never mind.
You're having a tough one today.
I have Wayne Gretzky Hockey 99. It's an amazing game for an N64.
I was too young to appreciate Lemieux.
Jágr played for the Rangers.
It's tough. I've always thought about guys I've wanted the Rangers to draft that they just didn't draft for some reason. But like Claude Giroux is not my favorite player to watch.
Yeah, like I like Tarasenko
outside the New York Rangers.
But he's also a modern day player. There's like a couple like I have modern day players that I like have. Like, I wish they were Rangers. Like, I know.
Yeah, like, Nathan MacKinnon is just, I don't care what the ticket price is. I will pay it to watch Nathan MacKinnon.
I'm going to go even worse. Like, not actually. Obviously, Connor McDavid is one of you. Everyone would say no joke about it. A player I've always, like, been fond of is Brendan Gallagher. Like, I would love Brendan Gallagher to be on a Rangers. I don't know why. I've always been fond of him. But, like, that's a player I love watching when he plays hockey. I don't know. I'm into it.
I don't know if this is a cop out. It's just I don't think enough people appreciated Nick Lidstrom on a national basis when he was playing for the Red Wings. So I'll say Nick Lidstrom mostly because I think he's the best defenseman the league has seen in the last X number of years. And maybe he didn't get as much national love as he deserved. I'm sure if Rick Carpinello heard me saying that, he'd be like, you're an idiot, a bigger idiot than I think you already are.
Yes.
But maybe the younger, more contemporary hockey fan isn't as familiar with someone like Nick Lidstrom.
I'll say Chara too.
I was going to say like Sergei Fedorov, someone in that ilk. But yeah. I think Lidstrom is the guy that it's hard to think of being a bad hockey team if you had Nick Lidstrom on your team.
Agree. All right, let's go to our interview. But before we get to our interview, we're going to hear from some of our advertisers. And before we even do that, we're going to hear from a new podcast from The Athletic. So transition.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
I think every football season is a big challenge in one way or another.
Introducing The Athletic Football Show, an all-new podcast with me, Robert Mays, and a team of world-class NFL writers and analysts. We'll feature expert guests and our plugged-in beat writers from around the league.
What Patrick Mahomes did in the last 9 minutes is just absurd.
You can subscribe now to The Athletic Football Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcast provider of your choice. And stay with us all season long as The Athletic brings you what matters most in today's NFL.
And today's episode of Bush's Breakaway is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped has you covered to keep your hair looking nice and trimmed and feeling fully supported. Manscaped offers precision engineering tools for your family jewels. The premium Lawnmower 3.0 is waterproof and includes an LED light, and it's made with advanced skincare trademarked technology, which reduces nicks and cuts of your delicate. Ooh. You can get this trimmer inside the Perfect Package 3.0, which also includes Manscaped Crop Preserver, Ball Deodorant, and Crop Reviver Ball Toning Spray. Very nice, Manscaped. Both super practical, and they smell great, too. Plus, for a limited time, when you order a Perfect Package Kit, you get two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag and Manscaped the Anti-Chafing Boxer Briefs. Manscaped Anti-Chafing Boxers, they're cooling boxer briefs. They're the best part. They might be the best part. Who knows? You find out. You tell me if they're the best part. Get 20% off. And free shipping today with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use THEATHLETIC20 for... And from the moose to the caboose, always use the right tools for the job. Manscaped. With football right around the corner, there is no better place to get in all the action than DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. To celebrate the return of football, DraftKings is giving all users a no-brainer start to the season. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Have you ever heard a football team losing by 100 points? Well, for week one, DraftKings is assuring you that if Kansas City were to lose in historic fashion, you would still cash your bet. That's right, DraftKings Sportsbook has moved the spread to Kansas City to plus 101 points for all users. So if Kansas City loses by 100 points, you still win big with DraftKings Sportsbook. That's a no-brainer. On top of that amazing offer, DraftKings is giving away up to $100 million in prizes to all users who enter their free football survivor pool. And all you have to do is sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook, enter their survivor pool, and you'll instantly get a share of up to $100 million in giveaways. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code QUICK to take advantage of this no-brainer offer. That's promo code QUICK and get in on the action for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 years or older. New Jersey only. Other terms and conditions and restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Back to the show. Hey, we're back with our guest of the day. It's one half of Evolving Wild. Josh, thank you so much for joining us. I think you're a recurring guest now. This is a couple times you've been on. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was trying to think. I think this is maybe third or fourth time now.
Something like that. Always a great time.
It's something. Yeah, I think that the first time was both of us, and then the last few times it's just been me, maybe.
What did we do to your brother?
I don't know. I think it's more that just for whatever reason, I tend to just kind of answer the DMs asking for a podcast. And we have we used to do like a little bit more of a proper setup to get like both of us on. But so we got new computers and the new MacBooks. Actually, they have such good microphones built in that I can just open it up and record it and it sounds like okay. So I don't know. It's a little bit easier just to have one of us do. And also I've noticed that even though I think it's fun, and I think our voices sound enough alike, I think it's hard for other people when there's two of us and we're talking a lot, you know, to distinguish both of us. And I think it gets confusing.
I think this is a really long way of just saying that Luke hates us.
Yeah, I agree.
That's really what it comes
just down to. Just let Luke know he's welcome back whenever he wants. And when we had you both on, I thought it was very interesting because I like to hear both your sides, even though like I feel like sometimes, and I feel like a lot of people feel this way, they have no idea which one they're talking to because you share the same Twitter. Just like people sometimes yell at me because Greg is Blue Shirts Breakaway and not Greg. So people yell at me and it's like, I'm not him. That's not how this works.
I think next time we can definitely set it up so that we can. I do like when we're both on, but I think that I think it depends. Like you guys clearly don't have a problem, and I think enjoy having both of us on. But I think some people do. It's just difficult, and we're pretty good about it. Like you know, we've done over the years we've done a lot of podcasts we're both on, mm-hmm. and we're both in the same room when we do them, and we kind of like look at each other before we're going to answer questions to try and like you know make sure only one of us is talking and that stuff. But it's a little simpler when it's just one of us, but maybe not quite as fun.
Well, let me ask you a question directly that you could answer for the both of you. How the hell did the Cap Friendly thing happen, and how pumped are you?
Well, first of all, very pumped. It's to be completely honest, this has been in the works for a very long time.
Awesome.
We've been kind of in. I mean, that was kind of some of our early stuff that we did even before. Building the website and having a bigger Twitter was just kind of getting cap info. I mean, it was, you know, as some people know, a lot of our intro to hockey stuff was just almost recreating like certain sabermetric or baseball type approaches for hockey. And that was kind of, because a lot of that stuff, you can kind of still get away with doing in Excel and you don't need to work with any big models. I think one of the first things we did after we started getting into it was kind of recreating with Dawson or Don't Tell Me About Hearts War metrics back in, I think it was the 16-17 season. When he released those, and we took that and then tried to do kind of similar, like the baseball cost per war, that kind of stuff. So how much does one win cost? How much, you know, value did this player add in terms of hockey, you know, wins, that kind of stuff. And so just early on, I think that we weren't using a ton of cap friendly data, but we were just kind of working with it early on. And they kind of, you know, took a little notice, but then kind of back and forth. I think the one thing was when we took up the torch from Matt Cain with the being the, you know, quote unquote contract model that people would look at after he got hired by the Devils. I think then we kind of had a bit of there was a good situation where it was beneficial for us to have their contract data, and they, I think, started to want to go down the path of adding some stats and stuff to their website, right? Because I think that was they had.
Just quick, not to cut you off, but quickly explain to everyone out there that what exactly you're doing with Cap Friendly now. So I know we just explained how you got there, but in case people don't know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty, like, to be honest, it's not the most, I don't want to say it's like the biggest, you know, it's not like a pure partnership where we're all, you know, now one entity. We're still doing our own things, but we're just essentially kind of doing some sharing of data and stats and whatnot. So we have essentially an agreement that we're using Cap Friendly's, contract data. So all of the stuff that is built and used and I guess would be any contract data is directly from and basically it's like legitimate Cap Friendly data, and that's goes the same thing. Cap Friendly added player stats to their player pages and team pages and that kind of stuff, and so you can look at contract data alongside, you know, some stats or whatever that they didn't have before. So that's pretty much the agreement, but it's pretty cool to see evolving hockey on the Cap Friendly website, which has admittedly extremely high amount of traffic compared to our website. So it's pretty fun to see that.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's almost like Cap Friendly is almost becoming its own little, by including you guys, it's almost morphing into hockey's version of FanGraphs.
Go on.
No. I was just, it's kind of like, I think Cap Friendly is still going to be more of a, they're definitely still more on the contract side, and that's always going to be their thing. I mean, at least for now. You'd have to obviously talk to them. I'm sure they're both, they're pretty happy about, I think, just having some stats, because that was some of the stuff I think that they had some feedback that people wanted to just be able to, you know, compare some stuff. Now, granted, I mean, most of the stuff that that they have from us is not any of our, like, what you might call proprietary stuff. So it's all kind of on our site. So, it's just a good arrangement overall. It's pretty happy that I think we started talking about a year ago about doing something like this. And so it's pretty great to have it finally come out, you know, a year later.
Before we get to picking your mind about the Minnesota Wild and some other things, there's something I've been meaning to tell you for a while, or at least ask you. I was in pre-pandemic days, when you were allowed to go to brunch and stuff like that on a Sunday, mm-hmm. I was at a brunch with one of my friends who's a gigantic baseball fan. And he was like, yeah, FanGraphs is doing a big crossover podcast where they have like a bunch of people on from other sports to talk about their analytics. And they were like, they had these two twins on for hockey. I was like, I know those guys. And I guess my question I wanted to talk about at that point in time was like, you mentioned picking stats from baseball and recreating them, but did you pick anybody's mind in baseball of exactly how they did things or the process of creating these analytics? Like, how much like influence did baseball actually have on you guys?
Yeah, I think that, as a lot of people know, I think from just our backstory, we didn't grow up as hockey fans. We grew up, even though we're from Minnesota, and our dad played hockey, and, you know, I had a lot of friends who played hockey. I didn't play hockey. I skied in the winter, and I played baseball in the summer, and I played baseball from when I was a kid to T-ball all the way up to college, and I stopped in college. And so baseball is always kind of my entry point to anything. And, I think that early on when we just first started getting into hockey, that was probably maybe like 10, 12 years ago. And I was already kind of into the Sabre stuff because that was already going on. And so when I first started watching hockey, that was kind of how, that was my entry point. It was like, oh, I wonder what else if there's Sabre type stuff that hockey does. I think when we first started getting kind of serious, you know, not just like going on Reddit and, you know, shit posting or making comments or just kind of going on random forums here and there, but like legitimately started working with data and metrics and trying to do stuff. We did early on, there were a few, I think Tango Tiger, Tom Tango on Twitter was a lot of his stuff is still out there and very public, and his early models or whatever are not terribly difficult to reproduce. That's kind of the whole point of them, is that they're, a lot of the times the stuff that he was doing was like kind of benchmarking so that you could do stuff that was more complicated, but you should be expected to beat the thing that he, you know, made. So one of the classic ones that he's associated with is a Marcel the Monkey projections for players, which are pretty simple, but that was some of the early stuff we did. So we reached out to him, and also I feel like he's changed his name, but Lickman, I think is his name, or no, MLG. I'm trying to remember. Let me see if I can, I should know this.
Credit to this guy.
What?
I'm just crediting him. Whoever this person is, I credit them.
Yeah, I can't. He had an excellent series of posts or like articles on aging curves, and we had some discussions with him about how to best do it. And there were a few other people, but to be honest, there hadn't. I mean, I'm not trying to say we were the first to do it, but there weren't a lot of people who had really kind of done the crossover between baseball and hockey like early on that had done more than just a couple of little kind of cursory looks at what maybe baseball had done. So it did kind of feel like we were on our own a little bit. But yeah, the Fangraphs thing, I just not to keep rambling too much, but that was just crazy because Ben Lindbergh asked us, he DM'd us randomly. They were doing that series that they were trying to in baseball's offseason. they wanted to get, you know, different sports. And I think they ended up getting like 12. They did like 12 or 15 episodes from various. Yeah. And I would recommend your listeners. It was an incredible series. Obviously, because we're on. No, I'm just kidding. It was everything else that Ben got on. But I had been listening to the Effectively Wild podcast for years before I was into hockey stuff. I mean, and it was just crazy to be on a podcast talking to Ben Lindbergh, who I had been listening to on that podcast for years before. It was just a really, like, that's one of the most surreal things that we've done, to be honest, and was go on the Effectively Wild podcast with Ben Lindbergh and just, like, talk to him. It was just crazy.
Like, so, if I ever went on with Zach Lowe, I wouldn't know what to do. You know what I mean? I'd be like, I don't know, man. I've been following you for 10 years. Like, what do I do at this point?
Yeah, and it was also pretty fun to hear from Ben that he was, like, he was aware of the hockey stuff, and, like, he said that it was just, that was one of the things he loved hockey. Like, he wished that he would have gotten into it earlier, and, you know, but it felt kind of like he was fully baseball still, but it was just clear. And also, Ben's just a great guy and super interesting. And so, yeah, that was pretty fun too.
Are you telling me, Josh, that you don't feel the same way when we invite you on?
Look, big time Ranger fan. A lot of notable Ranger people in your life, I'm sure. A lot of Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Rangers are one of the higher up in terms of just the people we interact with. And just, I think Rangers fans have, as you guys know, their own kind of, they're not as quite as offensive as some of the other fan bases online, at least from what we interact with, you know. And there's a lot of them. And I think Rangers fans in general are a little bit more open to some of the data side and analytics and don't seem to really. At least the people that reach out to us, there seems to be more just kind of, you know, but yeah, sorry. I haven't been listening to you guys for, you know, for
please,
10 years.
Like
that.
Please don't. Let's do it.
I am hurt, but speaking of hurt, Josh, have we ever podcasted during a time when Byron Buxton was healthy?
Oh man, it has been, I don't think so. Maybe once, but
like an off season podcast where we don't know the health of Byron Buxton.
I could ramble about this. It hurts. I'll just say that it hurts.
As someone that covered him in high school, it breaks my heart too. So I'm right there with you. shall we actually get into
we shall.
Rangers Wild specific talk now, yes. I suppose?
Yes.
Yeah. That sounds good to me.
Josh, I think the last time we had you on, it was pre-shutdown. The world seemed less tenuous than it is today. And I think we were specifically talking about our good friend Jason Zucker and how I wanted the Rangers to acquire him. Now that Zucker, he's gone. But before he left and before you left our last podcast, I made a snide comment about how Jonas Brodin might not be long for the Minnesota Wild universe. And we're now living in we're kind of approaching that universe where it's starting to feel more likely than not, I would think, at this point, right? You're a Wild fan. You're more connected to the rumors than we are. When we said it last time, it seemed like a far-fetched idea. Does it feel like a Jonas Brodin trade is still far-fetched?
I don't think, no. I think it's gotten more and more likely as definitely since the last time that I was on. Although I will say, I think that I was on right as the quarantine stuff was starting to come around because I think we talked about contracts. But point taken. Jonas Brodin, I feel like, is definitely one of the more obviously I don't know anything more than what you would hear out on Twitter. I don't particularly have any big connections to the team or anything like that. So this is all what you can kind of find out there. But just as a Wild fan and somebody who's been following the team for a long time, I think that it Brodin is definitely one of the players I think the Wild would be are definitely probably trying to get some value out of. And I think that he, along with probably Dumba, and maybe one of their some of their younger forwards, I think, are probably what the Wild are looking to probably try and trade into something. So I think that Brodin, from my money, I think a lot of teams are probably looking at him as a really great defensive option to be in their top four, probably. And I think that's definitely true.
What are the for people who don't know Brodin, because I haven't watched a lot of it, just be totally honest. What can you expect from a player like that if Rager fans, like, I know that's someone that's come up in trade talks for us. I know that's someone that fans want us to target. I'm not sure what the deal would take. I'm not sure what the value is, but could you explain the player a little bit for people who haven't watched him?
Yeah, so Brodin, he's a let me just pull up, just make sure I can. I wanted to get his age.
The charts are good. That's all I know.
Yeah.
He's my all-time favorite McCurdy heat map. That much I know. Yeah.
He's one of the Wild players that is kind of that, like what you said, the hockey viz, you know, basically just all blue shot map kind of thing. He's a left shot defenseman. He's been on the Wild second pair with Dumba for several years now. So I think it's been 3 or 4 years. That's behind the Suter Spurgeon pairing. They've tried him out. Okay, he came up originally as his rookie season, as some people remember, was a really good season where he played the right side with Suter for the year, and he was like 18 or 19, I think. And that since then, he hasn't really like done as much offensively. But what Brodin really adds is he's been one of the better, if not the best, defensemen defensively in the league for the better part of 5 or 6 years. He's kind of in that like Yarmolson mold, where he just is a pure shutdown D. But the thing I think a lot of people don't always realize is his transition game is extremely good as well. So he's really good at exiting the zone. He's really great at kind of making just great passes to set up like entries as well. Granted, the Wild aren't the biggest at zone entries. They've always been much more in the dump and chase kind of like, you know, get it down low, go retrieve it kind of approach. And that's been their system for a while. But defensively, he's an extremely responsible player. Great skater. And he works well. The other thing that I think Ranger fans might enjoy, or any team really, is he's very good at pairing with a kind of a more offensive upside like type player who maybe has some issues defensively. Like that was kind of always the thing with Dumba, is that Dumba was extremely talented, one of the best shots from a defenseman in the league, but his defensive game was always not very good. And so they basically have become a pretty good pair where they kind of balance each other out. I think a lot of people think that the really defensive defensemen can really be good on pairs with high offensive skill defensemen who need help defensively, but that's not always the case. But Brodin really is a great pair in general. And I think he, if given the shot, I think that he could have been Ryan Suter for several years if Suter wasn't on the team. I think he's definitely a top pairing defenseman from a defensive standpoint. So that's kind of just a broad overview of kind of where he's at.
That sounds like a perfect fit for what we're looking to do.
Yeah, the Rangers are in the market for any left-handed defenseman that could just play defense. Like,
yeah,
forget about playing it extremely well like Brodin does. Just someone to actually play it would be a step in the right direction for them. The knock on Bro, it's not even a knock, right? It's just a statement of fact. He's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. He's seemingly underpaid as things stand right now. I mean, he's making what, like a shade under $4.2 million per year. I don't know if you have models available on Brodin yet, because it's an additional year away from free agency. But this is a guy we're talking about that's going to be making north of $7 million when he hits unrestricted free agency, right?
Well, that's the thing. I think it's really the thing. I think it's tough. I can look. I'm going to look right now, because we do actually project contracts for players that aren't free agents right now. But it's a little bit tricky because it's kind of like out of context. So this isn't their free agent year. So I could pull it up. The thing is with Brodin is he's never been a high point getter. I think in the last few years, he's maybe been in like the 25 to 30 range. And he's not really known as a power play guy. I mean, he can play that, but he doesn't really get power play time as much. He's kind of more on the second kind of unit, that thing. I think right now we have him projected more at like a 5 year term, like 5 million. And I think that just based on he's been much more of a second pair D for so long, and he's just not that's the one thing that if people like with Berdines, he's not an offensive player. Like he can play in that role, but play he's just much better as in terms of his value comes from his defense. And so from a contract projection standpoint or just looking at what he might make, because he just doesn't get top pairing minutes and the top pairing points that come along with those are top pair of power play stuff. I think that his actual contract is probably going to come more in like I could see just because of the hype and just people. I think that defensive top pair guy is kind of starting to be more valuable because they're just not, they're kind of rarer. I think more like 6 million seems right to me. I think if we did it again, you know, or if we take into account if he's an actual free agent, but yeah, he's got another year. He will be, I think 28 by that time, I want to say. And so he's getting a little older, but I think for any team, Brodin is somebody he's also had, you know, he's been a very consistent player in terms of time on ice. Like he hasn't had a lot of injuries. He's played a decent amount of games every year for the most part, you know, here and there a couple games. But so, yeah, I think like something more like a 5 or 6 year deal at like somewhere between 5.5 and 6 or 6.5, maybe it seems more reasonable to me right now.
It seems very, very, very reasonable and something very enticing.
That stuff's so crazy to me, though, that like other NHL teams would use Brodin being used as a second pair defenseman to his detriment. Like, it doesn't matter what another team uses him as. If a team is signing him, you would think they would value him a certain way. Like, imagine teams winning the baseball free agency, right? Zach Wheeler was one of the big free agents last year, someone who never was better than a third or fourth starter for the Mets just because the Mets have always had ridiculous starting pitching. But some teams like, oh, Zach Wheeler's a number four starter, so we can't pay him more than you would pay a number four starter.
Yeah, and like that's just kind of what happens. I mean, I think that they're probably – that's why I say, like, I think our projection right now of $5 million AAV at a five-year term is low. Like, I think somewhere around six makes more sense for a team, especially if they're trading for him and then they'll get to see him. But that's the thing with hockey is that, you like, just teams, they don't – like, first of all, the Wild are one of the most underwatched teams, I think, in the league. That's not to say from league or, you know, from organizations, but a lot of people just don't know about their players unless they're, you know, Suter or Parisi or maybe Spurgeon at this point. But I think Brodin is just kind of a player who's just – he doesn't have – number one, he's had the name recognition. Number two, just because of Suter being on the team, he hasn't been top pair guy. So he's on their second pair, even though I think it's pretty fair, even though the Wild haven't done much with it. Well, they kind of have, but – the Wild have had the best top four in the league, I think, for several years. You know, I think the only comparable is maybe St. Louis or Tampa, maybe Nashville too, but at least the top four defensemen. And so Berdine's just been a part of that for so long, and people just don't really, you know, they know Dumba because he's got a, you know, heavy shot and he gets points, and they know Suter because of the contract and he's still quite good. And then Spurgeon just because he's also very good. But Berdine's kind of the fourth player out, odd player out. And so I could see it where there is maybe some narrative that's spun up around Berdin, and if he is like one of the, you know, only available top pairing type defensemen and he goes to UFA instead of just re-signing with whichever team he's on, that could drum up some support and potentially push his contract higher. But yeah, I agree with you. It is kind of crazy that just because a player is kind of stuck on second pair behind, you know, a long, you know, longer term, more veteran defenseman, you know, like Suter, like that's going to, you know, they're not going to get as many opportunities. And that's kind of how contracts are given out.
I guess one of the questions, I don't know how to word this correctly, even though I've been thinking about it for the past like 2-3 minutes. A player like Brodin does his job very well. He doesn't score points, but he plays excellent defense and he is a defenseman. But yet, because he doesn't score points, he gets penalized in his salary in the future. Do you find that to be like somehow points, despite the metrics and despite what they do on the ice, can go against a player's salary or contract?
Yeah. I think if I understand your question right, that's just kind of what we've always seen. You know, I think that
is that changing at all? Because like a player like Tony DeAngelo, who like,
right. That's the example, Ryan, that you took the example right out of my mouth. Like we shouldn't be living in a world where Tony DeAngelo is possibly making more than Jonas Brodin just because DeAngelo scores a whole lot of points. Right.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think that I would, as a team, I think you'd much rather have Brodin than DeAngelo just based on, what we have at our disposal to evaluate players, but that's just like not what has ever happened. Like teams just don't pay for players like Brodin. in the way that they would pay for somebody like, you know, like D'Angelo or some, or just somebody who's got a lot of points. That's just kind of how it works. You know, like Carlson, John Carlson is the player that gets paid, not Jonas Brodin, even though he, you know, Brodin probably adds in certain situations as much value, just differently. And I think it also depends on where, what teams, I just, historically, there aren't a lot of teams that have the ability to have a guy like Brodin who just plays second pair instead of first pair minutes, because they just have the defenseman for that. So I think it's just a unique situation. And, but also, like, teams are going to, like, if that's what the market pays, they're not going to overpay somebody like Brodin if historically no one's ever, like him has ever gotten paid. You know, that's just how the money works. Obviously, I'm not trying to,
right,
you know, state the obvious, but if a team doesn't need to pay Brodin as much as he probably is worth, then they're not going to, you know, unless there's some bidding war. I just don't, I think he's probably going to get just a little bit deflated in overall contract just because he doesn't have points and he maybe is more second pair minutes.
I'm just curious changes, you know, because baseball had that sort of like with the Cy Young for many years. It's like, wow, well, this guy won, you know, 26 games this year, but his, you know, all of his stats are total crap. And it gets paid because of that.
I honestly, to tell you the truth, it's not going to change until I think teams buy in or start having a more robust way of evaluating defense that isn't. And also, I think part of this also is what is allowed in arbitration and what's kind of like laid out in the CBA. So it's like the, you know, teams can't, I think they get like X, you know, plus minus and stuff, like, you know, their ability currently to argue for value, especially from agents, when it's, 'cause a lot of that's based on what is defined in and eligible in arbitration when they make arguments. You know, they can't use some of the stuff that I think that you would kind of hope to evaluate defensemen. So, or defense, I guess, in general. So, I think until teams start kind of taking defensive value in the ways that we maybe would prefer to look at that seriously, I don't think that we're going to really see a change there for a while anyway.
Can I pitch a stat to you real quick? Like, maybe this is something that you guys should look into. Something we talk about on this podcast very often. Do you have a, like, general manager intelligence scale? Because I would love to see something like that, like rating a general manager's like decision making intelligence and stuff like that. Because we talk about, like, when there's more quote unquote dumb general managers in the league, it's easier for teams who have these smart, brilliant guys to poach these players that these guys, the quote unquote dumb GMs, don't value.
Yeah, we also like, that's kind of in the same vein of looking at coaches in a certain way, but I mean, just because they have a lot of control. I think one of the ways you could do it, I think Peter Flynn from Winging It in Motown, I think is what he writes for, but he's got a podcast that the For Sure podcast, I think, but he presented it at RITSAC, I think. Was it, man, my time's all screwed up because of quarantine. It was either last year or 2 years ago.
It could have been 7 years ago, man. It could have been.
Yeah, I know. It was, you know, in these conferences, I think, well, first of all, I very much miss these the hockey conferences, but he looked at it, and I think this is a pretty good way to look at it. It's just value added in terms of like trades and like just looking at from a pure war standpoint is like how much value. And I actually can't quite remember exactly what it ended up looking like, but that's one way I think that you can gauge, you know, like how well a GM is doing is what do their acquisitions look like from more of like an overall kind of all encompassing player evaluation tool, like maybe something like War or Rapham or something like that. That's one way. We haven't looked into it too much. Cause I think that it's, well, first of all, getting general manager, it's not hard, but it's not, we don't have it set up in our pipeline. So maybe something to look at, I think, in the future. We haven't done a lot with that though.
I was half serious, but I would read the shit out of that stat. and reference it all the time.
While we're on that topic, that transitions us pretty nicely, I'm sure, by mistake, from Ryan Mead over there. But as a Wild
definitely
fan,
by mistake.
As a Wild fan, can you give us a sense of your confidence level in Bill Guerin? Because Ryan and I will sit here on this podcast for the next God knows how many weeks until the offseason starts, talking about how Bill Guerin feels like one of those GMs that you can take advantage of.
So that's your opinion of him.
That he feels like the guy you can take advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, if we're being completely honest, I don't actually think that he's really done a whole lot that we can really get a good gauge on exactly where he's coming from. And to be, I think for me, that makes me a little bit more confident in terms, because, and this is maybe unfounded really, but I think with the Wild, with a team like the Wild, if you're a new GM who came in a year ago after the whole debacle with Paul Fenton and just some of the trades and, you know, that whole thing that everybody's aware of now. I honestly think the best approach, which is what I think I maybe said this, or at least was thinking this when Luke and I were talking about it. If you're Bill Guerin, you just wait a year, just wait and see what the team is. You know, they have a lot of young players who are at that point or another, or, you know, in the beginning of this last year. So about a year ago, you know, they had Joel Eriksson-Ek, Luke Cunningham, Jordan Greenway, Ryan Donato, you know, Carson Soucy, Belpedio, a few other, you have seven or eight players that are getting into their mid, kind of starting to get to 23, 24, somewhere around there. And you don't know what you really have in them, especially with Fiala too, who had a really bad year after he was traded to the Wild. He just did not look very good and he didn't put up a lot of points. So one thing that gives me some confidence is that Guerin did wait a while. Like he just gave all of the team a year to just see what he had. And I think that is first of all, a good step from any general manager coming in after. Basically, I think we can kind of treat Fenton and then Fletcher as just kind of one regime where it was kind of, I don't think Fenton really did a whole lot. And he actually did kind of luck into maybe it wasn't luck, but the Fiala trade has ended up looking really good for the Wild. But I think Guerin is somebody who, from all things I can gather, is he does seem to be like thinking about the team in a way that doesn't make me, how should I put this? I guess if I, as a Wild fan, which I'm not as much anymore, but if I am thinking about it from a Wild fan, I'm not as scared as maybe I would have been with Fenton, obviously, which is to say that, you know, Fenton's kind of like the lowest basically level in terms of like what should scare highest level and what should scare fans. But I don't really have a good gauge, but I'm somewhat impressed that Guerin didn't make any big changes to the team in a year, just to give them a year to see what he had. And I think that he did that. And I think we will see some stuff this offseason. But I guess, honestly, I don't really have a good answer because I don't think he's really done enough for us to really gauge if he's that kind of GM or not.
I mean, the best thing that could have happened to Bill Guerin is it sounds like Peter Chiarelli is the leader in the clubhouse for the Panthers job. So doesn't matter what Guerin will do. We know where the weak link is and where we can take advantage.
Yeah, and I mean, I think from some reports out of Pittsburgh is that he was pretty good there. I think he also – the thing a lot of people don't realize with the Wild is that they are – whoever is going to be in charge of the Wild and whoever is in that organization, Leopold, the owner, is – he's not – at least unless he changes, and this is would be very off from what he's done, the entirety of kind of being the majority owner of the team, is he's not in a position that he's ever going to allow a GM to properly tank or rebuild or completely tear down. The Wild have always functioned in a situation where they're looking to get to the playoffs. Just from all indications is that that's how they're set up to have basically the Wild, you know, they sell out every game for the most part. And they've kind of for years been that team that gets to the playoff or the second round or maybe once or twice, but that's kind of what seems to be Leopold's whole approach. And to be honest, like Fletcher did a pretty good job, but I think any direction that the owner is giving the GM is just going to basically say, look, we're not going to really allow you to properly to fully tank or tear down or fire sale, that kind of stuff. So I think Guerin's in an interesting position because I don't think that ownership is going to allow him to do a proper rebuild. But the Wild also are in a position where I think they don't necessarily need to, especially with Kaprizov coming in and Fiala being young. And they kind of have some pieces, like we've already talked about with Burning or Dumba, to maybe make some moves, especially with the state of the Western Conference being fairly weak overall. I don't think it's like unreasonable to think they could maybe still have some success with their current team and a few trades. But it'll be interesting to see.
I know that, Greg, you wanted to talk a little bit about developing players from the KHL. Why don't you go ahead and do that one?
Well, it's not even – I don't want to talk about how you think Kaprizov will do with the Wild or any of this stuff. It's just you guys have followed a team that has been longing for one of their top prospects who has been playing in Russia to come over 4 years, and he's finally coming over this year. I just want to know what that kind of patience is like because it doesn't seem like the Ranger fan base – that now there is a large portion of the Ranger fan base that is 110% being very patient with Kravtsov and they don't see a problem with him going back to the KHL. But you are speaking from experience of having drafted a Russian product and watching him cook in Russia for years. What is that like? How did you survive? Can you provide any tips?
Well, first of all, yes, it's been it's been a long, it feel honestly at this point, it feels like it's been 7 years, but it's been a very long wait for Kaprizov. And I think that to an extent it wasn't quite as difficult, because I think with the KHL, it's just like once something's done, like with the KHL, it seems like that's kind of what's going to happen. And from Kaprizov signing, I think was his 3-year contract with the KHL, that I think that's when that happened. It was like, okay, well, he's just going to be in the KHL for several years, and like, it's pretty unlikely he's coming over. So that was kind of helpful. I think also is that that it was kind of one of those things where I'm just kind of used to that, to be honest, as well, as it like a little bit as a Twins fan, because we waited forever. I felt like waiting forever for Buxton and Sano, and I still feel like I'm waiting for Buxton, you know, to kind of come into his own. Is just kind of following both of those from baseball side as like really young prospects who were drafted first or second, first overall. And Kaprizov kind of always felt like that. So I feel like I personally had a little bit of experience with that, but it's been really tough, especially when you see all the Twitter highlights of him in the KHL scoring just crazy goals and kind of thinking about what the team could have been. But it also like is kind of tempered by the fact that, like, I mean, do you really want Kaprizov on the team when Fenton is kind of taking a knife to it and making just some really questionable decisions? So it was almost like I felt like he was sheltered in a way from a lot of the stuff that went on with the Wild for the last year, and it's maybe a better situation now. So ultimately it just kind of feels like a payoff that we waited forever. I don't really have any good advice for Rangers fans. You're just going to have to wait.
Yeah, that's going to suck for us.
Are you telling me a player you drafted in the year of our Lord 2015 cannot be called a bust because he hasn't played a single NHL minute yet in his career?
I think so. I think, yeah, that seems to be what I'm saying. But, you know, again, I don't know. I suck with prospects. Like, I can't tell you the number of times I've been wrong about prospects, because I don't work with prospect data or ever look at them. So they're kind of just like, prospects for me is like, I feel like a normal, like, you know, HF boards fan when I'm dealing with prospects. That kind of is where I come at it from. So I kind of just wait. I think the thing with Kaprizov is he's kind of old for being a pro. Like 23 is not, you know, you're kind of, he's going to need to come over if, and, you know, granted, you could kind of, I think Panarin is what a lot of people look at. And I think that that's seems, well, I don't know. We'll see. Like, maybe he is Panarin. I doubt it. I think that that's kind of more a unicorn situation than, I think what Kaprizov will probably be is a pretty good offensive winger who has some issues defensively. And the Wild are a perfect team, I think, to bring over somebody to maybe help him shore up some defensive issues. But that's, I think, what base level should be for Kaprizov overall.
I don't know. It sounds like he's a bust to me. 23 years old. He's never scored an NHL point.
Pretty garbage.
I hear you're capped out once you hit 21.
No, dude. Kako's already done. He's only 19.
He's passed. He had 1 year to show it, and he didn't. He struggled, and now he's just, you might as well trade him, you know.
Minus 4.7 or something on your charts, or some unreasonable number. Hey, had a good playoffs. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I will say it's very unlikely. He's on the flip side. It's very unlikely he's going to have a year that's as bad as he did this last year.
You guys don't understand. Kako was seeing the big picture while we were seeing everything. We couldn't see the forest through the trees. Right. Kako knew that if he sucked, he'd be able to play with Alexis Lafreniere.
Yes. He knew about the pandemic.
He understood the plan.
He knew everything.
Yeah, well, that, and it seems also like he needed to find, you know, he needed to hit the rock bottom to figure out where it was so he could just, you know, rise from that. You know what I mean?
Rise from the ashes, baby. That's what gods do. All right. I guess how sad were you when the number overall pick went to us? That's my last question.
I wasn't too sad, to be honest, because I was just happy it didn't go to, like, you know, the Blackhawks or the Penguins or the Oilers or the Leafs or something. I think that I was really rooting for one of, you know, Minnesota, Winnipeg, Nashville. Just because I think there were a handful of teams that just like the Wild haven't had a first overall ever. And they've, you know, I did a little thread looking at kind of top picks. I think Nashville is one of the most deserving teams actually of it. And Winnipeg also could do well with it, but I don't know. I like Rangers fans. And I think the Rangers are like, they're a team that haven't been particularly great for a while. And I think in the sense of like what you're trying to do with the draft and the lottery like that, I think it makes sense to try and give it to a team that could use it. Or that kind of more deserves it than a team like the Penguins or the Blackhawks or, you know, like the Oilers. Like, if it went to the Oilers again, I was going to just...
Yeah, it was over.
Yeah, it was not going to be a fun time if they had the first overall pick again. So that does make me a little happy. It'll be fun. Also, like, I like you guys. I like Rangers fans.
Thank you.
It'll be fun to kind of kind of see all the content that comes out of having, you know, that player on the team.
Oh, it's already starting. He can't carry a team. He's not a center. He's not generational like McDavid. Okay, yeah. We'll get over it.
Yeah, for someone who claims to like Ranger fans a lot, Josh, we continue to hear a lot of shit about Matt Zuccarello coming out of Minnesota. What are you doing to our adult son? What the fuck?
I felt really bad for Rangers fans. Probably there's still some people who tuned into the Wild just to watch him. Who were out, you know, out east. To be honest, I thought he had a okay season, but the thing was they strapped him to Alex Galchenyuk and Jordan Greenway. Jordan Greenway is a fine player, but Galchenyuk is really a player that just was on the team out of just that was kind of necessity, and it was a, you know, follow up from just the old regime. But it's like you put Zuccarello with Galchenyuk in the play, like that's just not a good way to. You're not giving him a chance to really succeed. I'm pretty sure those were the lines for most of the playoffs for them. But he needs a crafty center.
He really does.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I just don't like I so that that I think is the first number one thing is that Zuccarello just I don't think was in the playoffs anyway. He was not particularly given the best chance by basically being strapped to Galchenyuk as his center, and that was how they were deployed. And you're just not like that's how you kind of tank a winger is you put him with a really bad center or at least a center that is just not, you know, not doing anything to help. Like Galchenyuk needs. At this point, Zuccarello is he's getting older. He's not kind of what he used to be. He's still solid and he still can add some stuff if you put him with a pretty good center, but they're kind of jammed in wing. And so it'll be interesting to see what he does next season. But yeah, I don't know. The organization didn't do a lot for him, but also he's getting older. So it's a combination of both of those.
Josh, can't thank you enough for coming on. Greg, any final questions for our good friend?
No, I got really sad because,
the Mets?
A story that you haven't heard yet on this podcast, Josh, I drove an hour and 40 minutes to go place sports bets this weekend, because I'm just so bored and tired of quarantine. And one of I've gone 0-for-8 on these bets and I had the ninth bet that was hanging out there. And I see now that the Avalanche are losing 2-0.
Oh, so no.
That round trip of 3+ hours in the car, so it's gonna net me $0.
It's safe. Oh man, negative actually. Josh, why don't you plug what you do?
Avalanche Stars. That's a series I just did not expect it to be in Dallas.
Entertaining. Did you not expect it to be entertaining?
I don't know. I don't know what I expected. I think that when you have a playoff model like we do, that is, and then you just like you set your expectations, and then things go differently. That's always warped my impressions of teams, I think, to maybe more extent than it should. But I'm sorry, I think I talked over a question that you had there.
Oh, I was just saying, I'll plug what you do. Dude, let everyone know what's going on.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's been fun as always. So yeah, I'm Josh, one half of the Evolving Wild Twitter account. My brother and I, Luke. Oh, sorry.
It's all good.
I knocked my computer. Luke and I, we run and maintain a website called evolvinghockey.com. You can follow that on Twitter. Maybe, you know, consider popping over there, just seeing what you think, you know, what you like. Maybe go to Cap Friendly and follow the link to get to it if you want to see kind of how that's set up too. We're still, that's kind of what we do. We work on a website and we tweet out some takes here and there and try to have fun on Twitter. And that's what we're up to now, working on some cool stuff for the website. So hopefully we can get some more stuff out there.
Please let me know when you come up with the intellectual level GM scale. And if everyone likes what they do, they also have an awesome Patreon where you can get like exclusive stats and stuff like that. So go check that out. Josh, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
Pleasure. Hey, we're back. Great interview with our good friend, Josh. Learned a lot about not only how we're going to steal Brodin, but also how the Evolving Wild stats actually work. And hopefully he takes our idea of stats. And then, Greg, before we get to what you want to talk about, which I can only assume is the New York Metropolitans, we are leaving Hockey Town. So if you were here for hockey, it is gone. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Shirts Break, where Greg covers Rangers and stuff, other stuff like Mets and horse racing, and I cover stuff like Rangers and all of Ryan Mead. Follow us there. All right, Greg, take it away.
I just want to point out, okay, I want the world to know,
yes,
how much I thought of them today, where I made you record the last part of the podcast before the first part of the podcast, because I know how this would have went.
Thank you for your sacrifice.
If we just fired up.
Thank you.
And you said, hey, blah, 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 blah. I'm Ryan Gregg, say hello. And I would have just immediately spun into Mets world.
Mm-hmm.
So I did everybody a favor by saying, let's just do the second part first.
Okay, let's get out of the way. Here we are.
Get out of the way. Can we just talk about how stupid the New York Mets are, Ryan?
Very stupid, and hopefully that will change because you're bearing the lead that they are going to get bought by someone who's worth $14 billion.
Just,
billion.
3:59 p.m., coming right along. The Mets are already losing to the Marlins. It doesn't look like they're going to come back and win. Everything seems to be just going as you would expect to go for the Mets on a Monday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like the Mets are going to make a single trade with the trade deadline 1 minute away.
As they shouldn't, by the way. Yes.
Right, as they shouldn't. The only person the Mets were even connected to all day long was Christian Vasquez. It sounded like the Red Sox were asking for the moon for him. So the Mets very wisely said, you know what, screw it, we're not going to do it. So at 3:59 p.m., I was probably as satisfied as I possibly could have been with Brody Van Wagenen and the New York Mets. By the way, this is the same Brody Van Wagenen that not even a week ago shit all over the Wilpons and Rob Manfred and had the highest Q rating he's ever had as New York Mets general manager.
Pretty legendary stuff, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Incredible. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Just couldn't have been seen more positively in the eyes of Met fans than in that moment. And then we get to about 4:05, and we start hearing that the Mets traded for a catcher. All right. If it was Vasquez, we probably would have heard something. That's fine. It turns out it's Robinson Chirinos.
Mm-hmm. Texas, right? Or was
yeah. Now, Ryan, you're an advanced number guy, but this isn't even that advanced of a number. Everyone's familiar with WRC Plus and OPS Plus at this point.
Some people aren't.
Everybody
but,
knows.
But if you follow baseball, yes, you are familiar with it.
So would you want to take a stab at what Chirinos?
I saw what his WRC
-2.
Yes.
And I just want to put out there for everyone that average. Major League Baseball average for all these stats is 100.
Yeah.
And no, it's 100.
Well, okay, yes. You're right.
No, league average is 100.
That's
anything below 100, you are considered to be a percentage point worse than what is considered average.
That's correct.
100 is the definition of average.
-2.
He's -2.
But what about his framing ability?
I don't care. He's -2.
Okay.
And the one that really annoyed me, like the Todd Frazier shit, that's just hilarious. I don't understand why they think they need Todd Frazier. I don't know how he's going to get at bats. I honestly thought it was a fake account. I didn't think it was the real Ken Rosenthal when I saw the tweet.
Feels like a clubhouse move to me. Like a bringing a veteran kind of deal.
Well, apparently, because everyone, Pete Alonso had really nice things to say about Todd Frazier. I mean, he was a Met for the last 2 years. I guess everyone in the clubhouse knows Todd. I just don't get where he's playing. Like, he's not getting at-bats before J.D. Davis.
He's probably not, dude. He's a bench bat. That's it.
Yeah. So, like, whatever. The Mets probably didn't give anything up for those guys. The one I'm actually annoyed about is the Miguel Castro trade. I just don't understand. I don't understand it from a perspective of this is the trade that's actually supposed to be making the Mets better. They traded Kevin Smith, who most people probably don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Met. He's like a fringe top 10 prospect for the Mets.
Yeah.
He was awarded their minor league pitcher of the year last year for his work from Columbia, Port St. Lucie, and Binghamton. He was a 2017 draft pick. I think he's 23, 24 years old. Left-handed starting pitcher, has versatility, already on the 40-man roster. You could make a better argument that he should have been getting starts for the Mets over the likes of Corey Oswalt and Walker Lockett. He's already there. I don't understand why the Mets weren't using him.
So they pretty much gave him up for nothing.
It's not that they gave him up for nothing. It's just, what am I supposed to like about Miguel Castro? What? He's not good. He's a sinker ball pitcher, Ryan, who has a career ground ball percentage below 50%.
But he was also in Crazy Beautiful and in Holes. Did you ever think about that?
I didn't think about that. I do like Holes. It doesn't make sense. The Mets bullpen sucks. I understand the Mets wanting to try and upgrade their bullpen. I don't know why they're trying to do it this year. The Mets suck. They're 500, and they're 2 games out of a playoff spot. Like, even if they make the playoffs, congratulations, you've won the right to lose to the Dodgers. Like, that's all it's going to do. I don't get it. Castro, the nicest thing I can say about Miguel Castro is he's average. He's a replacement-level reliever. The Mets let one go 2 years ago by the name of Hansel Robles, and he turned out to be something decent. You don't trade smart front offices. I'm looking. I pulled up the Tampa Bay Rays.
Well, I have some things to say about them if you'd like, but yes.
Well, I just smart front offices don't trade for relievers.
No, they develop.
Who?
Or they pick them up off the scrap heap.
Yeah, like Diego Castillo. I think you and I both have an affinity for Diego Castillo.
He's lower on my Tampa Bay Ray list, especially right now with the Rays bullpen is literally decimated, but they're still somehow have guys that throw gas for no reason, but yeah.
But who in the Rays have never traded for a reliever in their history?
No, and they trade relievers. They signed guys like Chaz Rowe.
Mm-hmm. They signed guys like Chaz Rowe who has one good pitch, and the Rays just tell him, like, hey, throw that one good pitch. If you throw anything else, we're going to cut you. Like, that's what the Rays
do. Dude, but right now, I know we're talking baseball right now. Castillo is, like, the only arm that's legit in the Rays bullpen, despite them having the best, like, record in the American League. Like, everyone is dead.
Pete Fairbanks has been fine. What's wrong with Pete Fairbanks?
Ryan Thompson's okay, too. But, like, they're all their guys that you know, like, that have become those names. Like, Ryan Yarbrough is an opener. You know, like, Nick Anderson, like, Chaz Rowe, Yanni Chirinos, Jose Alvarado. Like, all those guys are just hurt now. So I would have liked them. You know, I'm going against the grain here. It would have been nice to see if they went out and got a reliever at the deadline because they have the best record in the AL and they could compete this year, and they didn't. They made zero moves. So
yeah, but the Rays are also the team that would trade someone like Emilio Pagan and get something back that they think is more useful.
Oh, and they do, and usually happens in their favor. They very rarely lose trades. I think you can make a case that they lost the Tommy Pham trade now that
Pham's hurt too, though.
Right, but Cronenworth Cronenworth, what's his name? Fucking.
He's been very good.
He's insane.
I was wondering where the Padres got him from.
Yeah, it was the Rays. It was in that trade. So, yes.
I for the life of me, I don't know. This is the point about the Mets I was trying to make is their bullpen sucks.
Yes.
Fucking terrible.
It is.
It's awful. They took their best reliever and made him a starting pitcher who two starts in has yet to be able to throw more than 60 pitches in an outing. And while Seth Lugo has been really good in those two starts, he's gone 6 2/3. I think he's given up one run. He may have only given up one hit too. Like, that's great and good. But we're talking about a team that couldn't hold a fucking 5-run lead with 2 outs against the Yankees yesterday.
Yep.
Like, I don't need the Mets to have another starting pitcher. The Mets need bullpen. And if the Mets rotation is so decimated that they're trying to use Gesellman and Lugo as starters, both of which are better relievers than Miguel Castro is, I would have much rather the Mets keep those guys in the bullpen and just give starts to Kevin Smith. I that's the thing I don't understand. You're giving starts to David Peterson. Peterson and Kevin Smith aren't that different as prospects. So if you're fine with giving one, for the life of me, the Mets made their bullpen worse by trying to improve their starting rotation. And now that their starting rotation continues to be decimated, they made their starting rotation depth worse to not improve their bullpen. Smart teams don't trade for relievers. It's like baseball 101. I can't think of the last time the Mets won a reliever trade is when they traded for Addison Reed. And the only reason they got Addison Reed is because the Diamondbacks wanted nothing to do with him.
Yeah. And Addison Reed turned out to be pretty good for you, but that's
great.
That's really,
he was great he was great for 2.5 years. And then the Mets wisely moved on from him. Don't trade for relief. Addison Reed was terrible for the Red Sox the second he left the Mets.
I hope that Castro turns out to be. And then the Twins signed him to a
3-year deal and they cut him.
Great for you guys. I hope he just is lights out for the next year and a half.
Miguel Castro?
Yeah. I hope
they have him. They have his rights for like 2+ years after this. He's not a free agent until 2023.
Okay. Well,
look, I'll be happy to eat my words. And maybe Kevin Smith is not the guy I should be upset about, right? He's a guy most Met fans probably have never heard of. He's a guy most prospect people probably have never heard
of. Dude, you know
he's a low-key prospect.
You know him a big prospect guy. He's not in the top 500. Like, he just isn't.
He's not. But it's not even that he's a sexy prospect. It's just that the answer to the Mets, my anger with this trade is not – I think it's less about Kevin Smith and more about just how the Mets are trying to create this answer. The answer isn't adding a reliever so Seth Lugo can be in the rotation. It's understanding that if you're going to add a pitcher, go get a starter and put Seth Lugo in the position where he could be most valuable. That's the bullpen, because your bullpen is trash with the exception of Seth Lugo. It boggles the mind that the Mets think they're making – none of these three trades actually make the Mets better, which begs the question of why you make the trade in the first place. You don't. Robinson Chirinos doesn't make the Mets better. I don't see how he's any better than whatever the Mets backup catching was doing. Todd Frazier doesn't make the Mets better. He's not going to get enough at-bats to be a difference. And Miguel Castro isn't an improvement over what the New York Mets have in the bullpen. Miguel Castro is basically just Franklin Quilome, except you had to trade a prospect to get him.
That's pretty much it.
I am probably too angry about losing Kevin Smith. I probably shouldn't be this angry about the Mets trading.
I don't think so either, dude. The team I follow is in first place in the AL, made zero moves to go forward. Zero.
But the Rays also understand it's just like this season's a big whatever the fuck happens, happens.
Right.
Like, unless you're the Padres who pushed every fucking chip in and just did.
Which is.
Insane work.
To me, to be fair, the Padres stupid because there's 24 goddamn teams that make the playoffs this year. That means your chances of getting knocked out are going to be higher than ever.
Right. I guess if you want to squint and give the Padres the benefit of the doubt, Clevinger, multiple years of control. Look, man, you're going to have to tell me what the fuck is up with Austin Nola that everyone in baseball was hot on his trot.
I think it's because it's multiple positions and he like the stats are pretty good for him, especially in the background.
He's hitting well this year. That's for sure. Can't
he's
argue
a quote unquote late bloomer. I'm not a big Trammell guy. I know. He's 1 year younger than us. I'm not a big Trammell guy. And I know Vinny, our good friend, has always been a big Trammell guy. But I know that you were kind of like, how did he get traded? I didn't see it as like I think his stock has sort of fallen in the prospect world. Maybe now could they have gotten more? Yes. Was the deal out there? Probably not. And clearly they were going all in, right?
So would you have rather had Gabriel Arias, I'm guessing?
Yes.
The big piece?
Yes. I would have much rather had
as someone that owns him in slump, I'm happy to hear that from you.
I would have much rather, but that's the way I look at it. And that's just a higher level upside. I didn't like trading Hudson Potts. I think that's a guy that has really nice potential and they have a lot of control.
The way I did justify the Padres trading Hudson Potts is only the San Diego Padres could trade Hudson Potts for Mitch Moreland, because while Hudson Potts would be like a number five, number six prospect for just about any other team, he's like a number 11 for the Padres.
I always respect teams when they try to win, man. Like they didn't give up anything of what I would call substantial. They still have
They kept Mackenzie Gore.
They kept Mackenzie Gore and they kept CJ Abrams. They kept Luis Campesino. Like they kept the guys that are really their core four of top prospects. They didn't give up anything of note in my estimation. Could those guys work out to be everyday players? Yeah. Could one of them pop? Of course, that always a chance, but they're going for it this year. They feel like they can win and they want to, this is more of a culture thing for them. They've just been a joke for so long. If they can take some momentum, they have to do it. I don't blame them whatsoever.
And you can justify just about every one of those. Again, the Padres trades, with the exception of Moreland and Rosenthal, they all have service time behind this. So it's like Clevinger will be good for this year, but also they need Clevinger for next year too, which is the whole point of that trade.
Right. And I thought that was a good deal for Clevinger, in my opinion. Like I was like, that's a steal.
Like, look at it. The Padres didn't give up shit for Trevor Rosenthal. No. Like, smart teams don't trade anything for relievers. Nobody does it. So I just – and this isn't even a point about Edwin Diaz, because I think Edwin Diaz, when the Mets traded for him, that was a unicorn situation. That's a guy that most teams shouldn't trade unless they're getting back Jared Kelenic. Then again, the Mets could have made that trade without including Kelenic. All they had to do is not be cheap bastards. But this is the point of the podcast where I say Steve Cohen is coming.
Yes.
Life should be good. I have to do is get through this season. The Mets didn't trade for Christian Vasquez, which means JT Realmuto is still happening, baby. Like, all I have to do is goose fraba this, get through this, understand that they're stupid.
Greg, I'm here all the time with you. There are so many things you should be angry at the Mets about. Kevin Smith, like, I'm okay, dude. You're going to be all right. Like it's fine. Like
it's more the philosophy than the play.
But you know that's gonna change with new ownership. Like
I know.
You think Brody's staying? You think he's staying?
I don't. I honestly, that's a good question. I really don't know.
I don't think
so
at all.
You would think Steve Cohen would want to bring in his own people.
He's gonna want to bring in everybody of his own people. Absolutely. Again, let me say this one more time. $14 billion. He's not going to be like, yeah, I'll take the people you guys had in. That was a fucking cursed.
I did have a lot of fun reading the shit that Steve Cohen has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on that no one cares about. Everyone knows about the statue, like the weird looking stick man statue that he apparently spent $140 million on, which, by the way, is more money than the New York Mets have ever spent on any free agent in the Fred Wilpon era.
Sure.
But the other one I found was the story floating around that he paid north of $100 million to the Food Network and Guy Fieri so Guy Fieri could take him on a Divers, Drive-Ins, and Dives tour of Connecticut.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, he spent nine figures to have his own personal Diners, Drive-In, and
Dives. Excuse everyone at home, I'm so sorry for my mechanical keyboard. Guy Fieri, Steve Cohen.
Look, I read it, so it must be real.
Watch head fund billionaire Steve Cohen eat chorizo on Guy Fieri's Food Network show. This is fucking crazy. Listen, yeah. If I had $14 billion, and I would pay Guy Fieri to do that,
that's
too.
That's the shit you'd spend it on. You'd be like, fuck it. What's $100 million to me? I get my own personal Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dines.
It's probably his favorite show. He was like, fuck, you know what? I want to be on that show. I've got the money. Like, that's
and it crazy. Was like he brought the whole family with him.
It's insane. Here's this another title. I won't read the whole thing, but Steve Cohen is planning a $20 billion middle finger for his critics. Okay, Steve. Jesus.
He I understand that Steve Cohen is probably going to turn out to be just a shitty human being. And people don't make $14 billion without being shitty human beings. Like, it's just a fact. Good people aren't that rich. Good people get rich. Don't get me wrong. But nobody gets that rich unless you're an ass. But you know what? I'm happy that Steve Cohen is going to be my ass. That's all I'm saying.
I don't talk much about the Rays on this podcast, but I wish they'd spend money. Do you see what they do with no money? It's unbelievable. They spend zero money. And
it's incredible.
They have depth out of their asshole at every position. Every fucking position. They have eight starting outfielders. They can't do anything. But they don't spend any money. It makes me so sick. I guess they signed Charlie Morton, right? For 2 years, $18 million or whatever.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Really? $18 million full dollars.
Yeah. They gave Blake Snell 5 years, $50 million. Woo. All right.
You know what? The shit that pisses me off is they're not going to have to give Snell a second contract because they're just
They're going to trade him with 2 years left and they're going to get a haul and that's going to be it.
Yep.
Every single
AKA
time.
AKA the David, they're going to do the David Price.
Absolutely.
Again.
And Wander Franco is going to be up best prospect in baseball next year. You best believe, like 3 weeks in, they're going to be offering him contracts for 10 years. Hey, you want this $120 million contract?
3 weeks in, right. They'll do what the White Sox do now. They don't promote people without an extension.
Yeah, they're going to do it right away. Like, hey, you want to play for us? $120 million right now, 7 years. What do you think?
I don't think they'll drop nine figures. We're still talking about the Rays.
Yeah, Wander's a different monster. We'll see.
I think 7 years, $85 million.
I would take it right now.
I know you would.
That's a steal. That's a steal. But that's like the worth of the Rays organization. It's fucking bullshit. All right.
I'm saying, just the again.
Final words.
It's the theory that pisses me off the most. That's really what it comes down to.
Fine. I understand you being pissed off at the theory, but Kevin Smith, dude, you're not going to miss him. The value added you're missing out on is very little. I understand what you missed the process. Like, you wish you were a good organization, but that time is coming, as we discussed.
We hope. Unless Steve Cohen has, like, really dumb friends.
He just paid $100 million to be with Guy Fieri. How could he be dumb? I don't understand.
I would, in a heartbeat, Guy Fieri, Mets general manager. Like, wouldn't even think twice about it. We take teams to Flavortown every fucking time we make a trade.
It's just like, it's a shit show now, so why not just have Guy Fieri there?
Why not?
That's what I'm saying.
He seems like a generally good dude, too.
He is like a generally good dude, from what all reports. And our friend Bailey talks to him all the time, which is weird, but yes. All right, man, let's end the show. We'll be back next week. We'll be back later this week. We're going to do Martin Jacques, a little bit BSBOT. So come tune in on Thursday morning. We'll see you then. Bye.